Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. To some, windows are simply panes of glass, and apples are a tasty snack. But for those who use personal computers, these objects can prove to be a pain in the neck. Here to answer all your computer-related questions, Jake Cunningham and David Stutzram. It's been a while. We've had fun drives. Things have happened. There have been births and deaths and injuries, and everybody's back now, and we're having fun. David Stutzram has over 21 years of experience in the information technology field. Bachelor's degree in computer and systems engineering from RPI. He was one of the Microsoft certified system engineers, one of the first in the upstate New York region. Jake Cunningham is the managing partner of Brown Trout Systems, LLC of Old Chatham, New York. After obtaining his bachelor's in mechanical engineering and master's in computer science from Union College, he worked as an AT&T data systems consultant and later created Brown Trout Systems. When he's not solving technology issues, he is a managing partner of Chatham Brewing, an award-winning microbrewery in Chatham, New York. It's the longest introduction I've ever had to read.
I was going to say, I need to beef mine up a little bit.
You didn't have to read all that.
It's like the beginning of the, you know, the dating game, you know? He's a bachelor from Encino, California. All right, welcome, gentlemen. What's new in the computer world?
Let's see. Dave has got some information about Microsoft Windows 8 coming soon.
Oh boy!
Not till sometime in the fall, probably like October, November.
October, November, and Microsoft is just Apple has just released their latest version of the operating system 10.8 to what's called Gold Release Candidate.
Does that mean now? Gold release.
Gold release candidates. As you develop a piece of software, you release versions of the software that you're going to push out to developers and users to test.
Yeah.
And the gold release candidate is the one that they think is going to be
right.
The actual product. And very rarely do they change.
Do they move up to platinum if things go really well? All right. So the number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Love to take your calls. With the computer lads, Diane and Sharon, Connecticut. Diane, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Okay, here's my pathetic question. I bought a Nano iPod about 3 or 4 years ago, and I've yet to be able to use it. I have a Dell Inspiron laptop as my computer. I bought a few songs from iTunes. Actually, a couple of times I was successful in transferring them or downloading them, whatever you call it, was to my iPod and playing them. But that was about 3 years ago. Since then, I have not been able to transfer anything. I tried downloading some lectures, podcasts, and I click on the podcast on the menu on my iPod, but in the synchronizing circle, goes round and round forever and ever, but it never... Is that a connection that just can't work?
Interesting.
So you've got iTunes on your computer, and in iTunes
I have
on
an account. Yeah.
Right, and in iTunes on your computer, you can see the songs that you've downloaded in iTunes under music. You can see under podcasts in iTunes. You can see the podcasts or whatever else it is that you
right.
want to have on your iPod. Okay, you plug your iPod in, and
right.
within a few seconds, iTunes. Shows your iPod listed there. I think it's right below, all those other settings like the music and the podcast and all that. And then you
right.
said that it up at the top it'll say syncing iPod and it just does that forever and never completes. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Once along about a couple of years ago, I was able to both buy the songs and get them on my iPod and play them, but they're no longer there. And I have never been able to do it again.
So is there anything good on your iPod at all?
Like be one Stevie Wonder song.
Well, that's a good one to have.
If you click on the iPod in iTunes on the left-hand side, if you click on whatever you called your iPod.
Right.
And then in the right-hand side, in the right-hand pane, there should be an option there someplace. I don't remember exactly what it says, but it'll say something to the effect of, like wipe out or reset my iPod, like set it back to factory conditions. I would do that.
Okay.
And basically start over with it.
Okay.
Because I'm guessing that something just got, a little bit messed up on your iPod, and if you just reset it back to, basically wipe it out,
yeah.
then I think that the sync will work because everything is in iTunes. That's it's not that iTunes isn't seeing the iPod or that you can't see the stuff in iTunes. It's just not
synced. Right, and okay. I did it once before. But I do have to press on the menu podcast, right? When on the Nano.
To listen to podcasts.
To listen to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But okay.
The only other thing is too,
yeah.
In the settings for your iPod too, there's a bunch of tabs at the top that where you tell it what things you want on the iPod. So you need to make sure that you've told it that you want those songs or those podcasts on the iPod. But I suspect the fact that you're saying that it sits there synchronizing and never finishes that's the action.
Because generally
the
default the default setting for the iPod is to sync your entire iTunes library. So
what does sync mean? Does that download?
Well, it does. What sync means is actually short for synchronize.
Yeah.
So what it's doing is it's taking your iTunes library that you have on your computer and it's duplicating that library on your iPod. So all your music and your podcasts and your videos and things like that are going to be duplicated on your
iPod.
And the other direction, what it does is it keeps track of, like, for example, for the podcast, it'll keep track of how far through the podcast you've listened, and it'll synchronize that setting back to iTunes on your PC. So, for example, if you had two different iPods, those would be in sync in terms of how far through the podcast you've listened.
Okay. Hey, Diane, we got to move it along,
thank you.
Yes, appreciate the call. Let's go to Carlene in Saratoga. Carlene.
Hi. I'm a Mac addict, I should say first, I'll confess.
Okay.
And I have OS X 5.8, and now I'm having trouble doing a lot of things online. Safari and Firefox no longer support my system, and I'm going to need to get a new computer, and I'm wondering, it sounds like you've already answered it, but I'm wondering how long you think Apple is going to continue to make computers.
Good one.
This rumor keeps coming up, you know.
There's a rumor about this?
Well, I keep hearing it that they're going to focus on iPads and iPods.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I see.
Other toys.
Apple, for a long time, PCs were dominant, and they still are dominant, essentially, in the business community. But recently, Apple is very near par with PCs in the business environment. So Apple is still making and will still make laptops and notebooks and desktop computers. I don't see any time in the near future, say in the next 5 to 10 years, that Apple's going to stop making desktop computers.
Okay.
It wouldn't make any sense.
All right.
Okay.
For your particular computer that's running 10.5.8. Depending upon how old the computer is, you may be able to upgrade that to 10.8 when it comes out, which should be fairly soon.
I don't have the Intel chip. My computer.
Okay, so you're stuck with you're as high as you can get. So,
I can't use Update Flash Player or a lot of other.
So you're gonna over time and pretty much to a certain extent, Apple is going to let you die on the vine in that scenario. So if you want to continue using an Apple computer, it would be best for you to buy new.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Carlene, thank you so much. Let's go quickly over to Mike in Hudson. Hiya, Mike.
Hey, I have a quick question.
Sure.
I have an HP OfficeJet 4500 printer fax copier, and I just got a Toshiba laptop, and I'm not sure what the model is, but it's pretty new. It's running Windows 7, and it just says that I don't have a driver for it, and I'm trying to find a driver for this printer, wondering how I could go about doing that.
The easiest way to do that is to go to the HP website. Click on the support button, then right there they'll have an option for you to type in the model number of your printer. You put that into the website on the HP support page, and then it should bring up all the available options with respect to the printer driver. You may have a printer that's not supported by Windows 7, but it's
by HP by Windows 7.
Right. So
HP is really, really good about stopping supporting things.
generally,
is there an aftermarket driver or something?
There's not usually any aftermarket drivers. Generally, what will happen for a multifunction printer such as the one you're talking about, there will be you will be able to fool it into accepting the basic print options, but. And sometimes you can In some scenarios, you can apply a Vista driver onto Windows 7 and it'll work, but it's an iffy proposition and doesn't always work. Because the Windows 7 and the Vista printer subsystem is almost identical.
So is it time to get a new printer? Would that be easier?
Yeah, but I would definitely first search the HP website.
Yeah, check for the driver first.
For the driver, because there's a good chance it's there. And then you just go to HP, you click on the support button, you put in your model number, and it should bring up your drivers.
Well, Mike, thanks very much. We're up against a break here. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. More with the Computer Show on Vox Pop coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Schenectady Museum and Planetarium, presenting science discovery demos about physics during July, weekends at noon. Planetarium shows weekends at 1, 2, and 3 p.m., schenectadymuseum.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton. Since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor, bluebonnetdiner.net. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, currancompliance.com. The Theater Barn, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, starting July 12th, running through July 22nd, professional theater in the country, theaterbarn.com. And Lake George Kayak, a kayak and canoe resource, providing sales, rentals, lessons, and tours. Every day is demo day, lakegeorgekayak.com.
Now we got some happening music here on the Vox Pop. The computer guys are bobbing their heads. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Jake Cunningham, David Stutzrum are here. You're there. Let's go to Cheryl in Armenia.
Yes, hi. I try to access the net via my husband's computer, and it's a laptop Dell. And unfortunately, it used to be part of an office system where, you know, he was networking with other people, and it no longer is and hasn't been for 2 years. But the problem is, depending on some of the links I try to click on for contact on the net, I get a window that pops up. It's a Microsoft Mail window that says Novell default settings with like four little buttons, okay, cancel, help, and options. None of which I know what to do with.
You said Novell?
And as a result, I can't, whatever that is stopping me.
Maybe, it sounds like would that be GroupWise is the default mail client?
It says Novell default settings. That's what it says in the window.
Capital N-O-V-E-L-L. I think what's going on is you still have an IPX, SPX protocol stack on. Your network
card. Of course, that was my first choice as well. What the hell does that mean?
But why would it still be in there, and it wouldn't even be close to the Wi-Fi because like hundreds of miles away.
No, this is.
You think it's the protocol stack?
I think it's just the protocol stack.
Yeah. All right, hold it. Stop.
And
now.
So,
does that mean?
Okay, so what's a protocol stack?
That's right.
A protocol stack is simply the language that your computer uses to talk over the network.
Okay.
And there are different languages. TCP/IP is the language of the internet, but there are other protocols that have been used in the past for other like file print sharing networks.
So what does Cheryl do?
So well, I mean,
this doesn't always pop up. Just
the quick answer is what you want to try to do is remove that protocol from running on your network card, and you know the short answer to that is to seek professional help.
The best thing to do would be, if you want to continue using the computer, in my opinion, would be to reinstall the operating system. From scratch to remove all of the the tentacles where it still thinks that it's talking to a business computer network that it's not talking to anymore.
Okay, now this isn't directly connected to this, but it is connected to it. I couldn't connect to you guys today to WAMC.
Really?
When I tried to click on you, I got that window. So what I did was I went to my mailbox and I tried to send a mail direct to what I found on the web, which is lowercase mail at wamclowercase.com. And I get back a message saying that's not an valid address.
WAMC.org.
Yeah, it's O-R-G. It's a
.org. Well, guess what? On the website it says com.
I bet you this is a group-wise email client thing.
Could be. Could definitely be.
The links that you're clicking on when you get this error, these are email links, not web links, like not to bring you to a different page.
It's a contact link.
Interesting. Okay, so
Dave's
right. It is your default email client.
What email do you use? Like a web-based email?
I'm Yahoo working out of Gmail. Net Zero.
Yeah, so...
At home. I mean, we're talking at home now.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you get to that using... So to look at your email, you go to a website and you...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Net Zero,
So the easy way to solve that is to give you the very quick and dirty fix is to right-click on your Internet Explorer icon, you click on Properties, and then you go into your Default Programs tab. And in there, you want to make sure that you change your default mail client.
To... Internet Explorer?
I don't think you... Is there anything you can do? I don't think so. I think that only works with Windows mail clients. I don't think you can tell it to go to a web-based mail client. I think what you're going to have to do, actually, is from now on when you go to click on those, is instead just copy the email address, go to your Net Zero web-based email, and just paste it into there. That's, I think, going to be your only really good
solution.
Because,
see, what's happening is the Windows has remembered, or at least there's a setting in your Windows that says if you go to send email from a web client, what it does is it will automatically open up your default mail program. This is the program that handles your email, right?
So
the settings on your husband's computer when he left his business has not changed, and so what that's going to do is try to go ahead and open up the email client that he was using when he was at work, and that was something called GroupWise Email, which I'm pretty sure is the Novell. As the Novell email client.
Okay.
And so you need to, most likely I would change that to something else because the GroupWise isn't working, or to none, as in you have no default email client.
Oh, that'll work, yeah.
And then you can copy that email address and then start up your Net Zero and put that in there. Otherwise, when you click on that link that shows an email address, it's going to try to open up a program and send an email from within that program. And the program you're using doesn't work because the one that's set up is the one that was set up at your husband's office.
All right, Cheryl, we have to move it along. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, so is this a question of Novell having been uninstalled, but it's still there are parts in the registry that say, oh, well, Novell is here?
I think it probably wasn't installed. A lot of times people will take a computer that, like a work computer, and the company will say, hey, do you want to buy this old computer?
Right.
Sure, that'd be great. But they don't wipe anything off of it. They just basically hand it to you.
So it's still there.
And still got all this crap on it, right, and all these settings that aren't appropriate to being used in the home. And what you should do with those is usually there should be either like a recovery partition or a DVD that came with the original operating system.
Yeah.
Reinstall it from scratch and then start using it.
It's like you got a new computer from the...
Yeah.
Fair enough. Let's go to Edwin in Red Hook. Edwin in Red Hook, you are on, sir.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the lady was talking about downloading podcasts onto her Nano, and I don't know a whole lot about all this, but I have a Shuffle, and I've downloaded a lot of things onto it from iTunes, and how it works, when I plug the Shuffle in, that whole sync thing doesn't mean anything. That's always on. It's always just something that goes in the background that has no meaning. What really matters is that when the Shuffle goes in and I go to iTunes, I come up with that icon that you said, like I can go to my Shuffle, and on the right, it shows what's on the shuffle. But down below, there's some buttons that let you reload or whatever you want. So what I have to do is make a playlist within iTunes, and then when I'm on my shuffle menu, I have to... I'm sorry, I'm looking at the computer right now as I'm talking, trying to figure it out.
Well, see, general...
I have to basically... There's a button to change what's on your shuffle. So it could show you what's on the shuffle, but you could also load something else. So, like, I have a whole bunch of playlists, I guess they're called, or set lists, or whatever they call them in iTunes. So right now I might have shuffle number 6 on it, which is 50 songs. But if I want to change it to shuffle number 7 with another 50 songs... Then I have to just do that. There's like a load setting down at the bottom towards the right, I think.
Yes, and so...
You tell it to load playlist or shuffle list 7, and then it puts that on. So I would think that has to do with the podcast, too.
Good point. It does happen that way, Edwin. I mean, what happens is on a shuffle, you have a very limited amount of memory, and often a shuffle...
Yeah, that's for sure.
Often a shuffle won't be able to synchronize your entire...
Yeah.
Your entire... iTunes library, so you need to selectively put things on your iPod shuffle.
All right. That's great. Edwin,
so I didn't know if that helped her, and I didn't really have a question. I just thought if she turns what she wants into a playlist and then changes that playlist. I thought it just came up on my computer if you want me to...
Call
back.
No, that's good. Yeah, give us a call next month. These guys will be back in the regular rotation. You know... my son has an iPod Touch, and so I will not. I mean, there's not enough memory to put all the music that is on the big computer in. Mm-hmm. So I've just told iTunes not to load music on automatically, and I'll just selectively put on whatever I want.
Right. The other thing you can do, you can also tell iTunes to lower the bit rate of the songs, which will make them smaller.
Yep.
Which might fit.
Why
more.
Put it on if the audio quality is going to stink? Right.
Does your son really care?
I'm sorry.
Yes, and I can't have it automatically sync because he's too young for Zappa. Betsy in Gilboa. Betsy, you're on.
Hi there. I currently have HughesNet satellite service here because I live in a very, very remote location.
God bless you.
Like Chatham?
Yeah, like Chatham, only the other side of the river. And I'm about to use up my current contract with them, which normally I would say hallelujah because I think they're really bad service providers. However, I don't know how to research what other options might be available. I don't know what the terminology is to Google. I don't know what to do to find out if there is an alternative.
Okay, so generally you've got a couple of different alternatives in the area. So you need to call your local phone company to see if they offer DSL.
Okay.
Then there are a couple of other, you know, generally if there's nobody offering, if your local phone company is not offering DSL, generally there's no other DSL being offered, but you can call some of the other providers like One Communication or Verizon or whoever else to see whether or not they'll be able to supply you with DSL. DSL has a 18,000 feet limitation, or in other words, about 3 miles from a central office you need to be in order to be able to get DSL. So if you're not within 3 miles from a central office, which would be one of those little telephone company...
Brick
homes,
places,
you know, little houses there, then you probably won't be able to get DSL.
They can't have repeaters, essentially, on poles?
No.
Amplify the signal?
They don't really do that.
And what about
the other options would be fiber, but generally out there there isn't fiber.
No. How about does your...
So what are those cards?
Okay, so right. So
does your cell phone work at your house pretty well?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Because that would be another option, whoever your cell provider is.
What are they called, those?
MiFi's usually.
Yeah. MiFi.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
MiFi. MiFi.
Okay.
What does that mean?
What that does is you're creating... Now, there's such a thing called Wi-Fi. Like a Wi-Fi
hotspot.
A MiFi is a hotspot that's generated from your cell phone. So it's yours, as in my, yours,
oh, I
your
see.
Wi-Fi.
Or from a separate device.
A MiFi.
Okay. Then you create your own sort of... Right. So your device then will wirelessly connect to that.
Exactly. So it's a cellular phone, essentially, yeah. And it has a Wi-Fi signal that's generated on it. So you can connect an iPod, or you can connect your computer, or you can connect other whatever devices will work on a Wi-Fi hotspot. You
and
can connect
and
to
if
your,
that doesn't work?
There's always Morse code.
if that doesn't work, there isn't very many other options with associated.
No satellite.
She says she has satellite.
Oh, that's what you have now. I see.
And the satellite is, you know, the big problem with satellite is that it's very expensive to get a good high bandwidth contract with the satellite, and if you exceed your download a limitation, they then throttle you. In other words, so let's say you get 400 megabits or maybe 400 megabits or maybe a good amount of bandwidth,
yeah.
And you use that up, they throttle you down to 28.8, which is like worse than a modem from 1975.
Yeah, I've had a few of those, yeah.
And so until a certain period of time elapses and your bit rate per minute comes back into the zone.
Okay.
So it can be very frustrating, especially if you want to do anything associated with media, if you want to watch a movie or anything like that. So,
I have to say I have a business connection, and at 10 o'clock at night, even if I haven't used up all the,
bandwidth.
You know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. all the
bits, bandwidth.
Yeah, available to me, it still slows down to a crawl.
Oh, boy.
It's almost like they say, okay, that's a remote location. There's nobody working online, so we're just going to shut off that portion of the satellite. It's horrible.
Well, let us know how you did. All right, call us next month, and we'll find out how you solved this.
If you can get a good solid Wi-Fi, a good solid cellular signal, that would be your next option to try.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Betsy. Now, of course, I've seen in the press, have not seen it firsthand, that some of the providers of 3G and 4G will also throttle after a while, right?
Yes.
A certain limit is reached.
Yeah, that's the whole farce behind unlimited internet access. Well, it's unlimited up to 5 gigabytes of data.
Okay. Let's go to Mark in Albany. Hiya, Mark.
Hi. I have a MacBook Pro running 10.6, and I have a big problem with my Safari browser, which I did not have with previous versions. I have a DSL, which is slow enough to start with. But the problem is I like to click on a link in another tab and or another window, look at it later, so I tend to browse with multiple windows and tabs. And if there's a problem, this version of Safari tells me it wants to reload every tab in every window, which I think is a very unfriendly design. You know, if that's a problem in subsequent versions.
All right.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be a problem in subsequent versions because that's just the way the browser is designed to work. If you've got a bunch of tabs open, unless you tell the browser to forget all the tabs that you've got, when it crashes, it's going to try to open all of them back up again. And
I have one and a half gigabytes of RAM.
Well, it's not necessarily a RAM issue. It's when you have a browser open and you open several tabs, each one of those windows is still requesting information from the internet. And so, if you open five, six,
not to do that.
You can depending upon the browser you have. You can tell it to not accept requests of any service of the non-active window, that's a more advanced setting, and you'd have to go in and change some.
What about just getting a different browser? Firefox does work, I believe, on the Mac, and can you get Chrome for the Mac?
You can do Chrome for the Mac. That might be a better option.
Yeah, I don't
Chrome
want Google tracking me.
Well, Safari's
not a great browser. Yeah,
Safari is probably
Apple's tracking you just as much as anybody else.
I mean,
all right.
So I would say the next step would maybe try Firefox.
Plus, if you use Chrome,
and not a problem with previous versions of Safari. It's just a bad feature that they designed into new versions.
I couldn't answer that as to whether or not it's a specific feature within the Safari for 10.6.
It's extremely unfriendly and unnecessary.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunately one of the drawbacks that happens with some Apple software. They decide what they want you to do, and you got to live with it. So
sorry, Mark.
But way to provide feedback to them about it.
Good luck.
All right, we got to go. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. More on the Computer Vox Pop next.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting American Impressionism, Masterworks in Watercolor and Pastel, featuring works by Theodore Robinson and John Singer Sargent, arkellmuseum.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, empireexhibits.com. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, and paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. NBT Bank, offering personal banking, financial planning, commercial and business banking, NBTBank.com, member FDIC. Hills Alive, a festival of the arts. Four Southern Vermont arts groups presenting a schedule of concerts, art, and photography exhibitions and more in venues throughout the region. Hillsalive.org. And Flavors of Cook Farm, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering homemade ice cream, indoor and outdoor seating on a century-old farm with a scenic Holyoke Range vista watching the resident contented cows. FLAYVORS.com.
Okay, so I just wanted to let you know, tomorrow night, that's July 12th, all WAMC frequencies and web streams will be off the air for a brief time between 9 and 10 o'clock. Engineering is making some repairs and upgrades to critical power systems for the entire network. So if you're tuning in tomorrow around 9 and you don't hear anything, well, we will be back. But, I'm told by engineering it may be significantly less than an hour, but... better to plan between 9 and 10 tomorrow. So there you go. Computer show, David Stutzrum is here, Jake Cunningham, and your calls, 800-323. No, that's the fund drive number. 800-348-2551 is the proper number. Paul in Altamont. Paul.
Hey, guys. How are you there?
Hey.
Good.
Good, thanks.
Hey, I have a first child going off to college.
Me too.
All right.
Congratulations.
And thank you. I think. let's see.
Welcome to the land of death.
Looking for a computer. The family members have been gracious and generous in helping to donate and defray the cost of a new computer. And coming off of purchasing a couple of really bad laptops over the past couple of years that have run hot and run slow and run very, very noisy, she's certainly going to be looking at something lighter, leaner, and faster, I hope. But I wanted to ask you if you have any good methods or resources for doing a little research, or if you happen to know any yourself.
Well, generally my recommendation for a student going off to college is to contact the college IT support staff and see what they are supporting on their network, as well as any programs that the college may have for discounted computer systems. Often Apple and Dell and some other of the large manufacturers will offer discount programs for students coming into the school. And some of the schools actually will sell you a discounted computer as well as part of the tuition program.
You know,
so that's the first place to check, I would say. Now, Dave's son is running off the college as well.
We did check with the university, and it does have recommendations on what they run, and they are a Windows shop, I guess. So, but we should recheck and see whether they have any discounts or deals set up for purchase of a notebook or a laptop computer.
Yeah.
Often they do, I think, because some universities have been making it a requirement for the freshmen to come in with a computer, in which case than they do supply options with respect to obtaining a discounted unit. But
aside from that, you know, the, if you watch like Best Buy and places like that, they're running a lot of sales. I think, you know,
back to school
now. Yeah, there's lots of back to school sales. You know, in terms of brands, I personally think that Lenovo. I know a couple people that have Lenovo laptops that that do run substantially less hot than some other laptops.
But. And I frankly wouldn't be afraid of connecting with Dell or HP or Lenovo and investigating their refurbished product lines. Their reconditioned units are often 20 to 30, maybe sometimes even 40% less expensive. You still get the same warranty, and they're just slightly used, and or if not used at all, they may have just been sent back.
Just discontinued models, even.
I would definitely investigate the reconditioned or refurbished models as well from the large manufacturers.
All right. Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for the call. You know, our laptop, I think I told you several months ago that my two-year-old destroyed our laptop, and I found one at a reputable used computer store in town. And I got a great deal, and it's probably a better machine than our home computer. And it was cheap.
Well, yeah, they say computers are the kind of things where if they don't, there's a reverse half-life of death of a computer. So if it lasts for the first 5 seconds, there's a good chance it'll last for another 10 seconds. And then after that, it goes on, you know, for another 20 seconds or another 40 seconds. And so it goes up and up. And the longer it lives, there's a good chance it'll live even longer.
Right, provided there are no two-year-olds around. Lisa in Utica. Lisa, you're on.
Hi. I have a home PC and a business laptop that are both in the same room, and they share a printer. And right now, for the lack of knowing any other way of doing it, we have two different cords for the printer. One's put into the laptop and one's put into the home PC, and we just switch them over when one of us wants to use the printer. Is there a better way to go about doing this? Is there some sort of an adapter that you can use? You know, something that so we don't have to keep switching them back and forth?
Well, I'd say about yes. The answer is yes. And what you do is you plug the printer into one of the computers, and then on one of the computers you share that printer over your network. And in which case, as long as your two computers are on the same network, which I assume they are, considering they're probably accessing the same internet connection, you can share that printer through one of those computers. The only drawback to that is that in order for you to print to that printer, the computer that it's plugged into needs to be turned on.
Okay.
That's, of course, assuming that the printer that you're using doesn't have a wireless network connection possibility or some other network connection.
Yeah, it does not.
So the basic process is to plug it into one of the computers that on your network and share that printer. And you can just look that up on Google under share printer under whatever whatever operating system it is that you're using, say Windows 7 or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then say share printer, and then it'll explain how to go about sharing that printer. And then
on the other computer,
the other computer, you connect to the computer that's sharing the printer, and then you print to that.
Huh. All right.
Okay. So, well, thank you.
Lisa,
I'll give it a shot.
Thanks, and thanks for listening in Utica. We appreciate it a great deal. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. David Stutzrum, Jake Cunningham here, and it's time for the lightning round. Here we go. Eleanor in Northampton.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Eleanor.
Hello.
I have a Dell computer, a laptop, and I was away for the weekend, forgot to turn it off, so when I came back it was pretty warm and has been behaving peculiarly ever since.
Hmm.
On Monday, I couldn't use the mouse, and if I used the pad, it just skittered all over the place, so I couldn't ever really focus the indicator. So I stopped for Monday. On Tuesday,
are you turning off the computer between these times?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, not only turning off the computer, but turning off the power, too.
Hmm.
On Tuesday, I turned it on and had trouble from the very beginning. I had the opening strip, I don't know what that's called, and below it it said, for troubleshooting, push F8, which did nothing. So I stopped for that day.
It sounds like you may be having some hard drive issues. If you're getting something like a black screen with white lettering on it saying press F8 or something to that effect, then generally that's a type of a problem that's associated with the starting up of the computer. It's what's considered a boot problem, and that may be related to the hard drive, and your hard drive may be failing because...
Did I just tell you what happened today?
Yes.
Okay. It turned on. It was, I thought, perfect. I got everything, even pictures that people had sent me. And I thought everything was fine until I tried to answer an email, and I wasn't getting letters every now and then. I couldn't print an A, or I couldn't print an S, that kind of thing.
Huh.
So I never got to the point where I could send it because it was illegible.
Is this
so
on
that,
a
that's where I am.
Is this
right?
On a laptop or a desktop?
A laptop.
Laptop, yeah. So,
It could be a memory thing.
It could be a memory thing. That would be a very difficult one to diagnose over the phone.
Okay. Yeah, guys, what is your web? Can people do you still do this sort of thing?
Sure.
Where's your website there, Mr. Brown Trout?
www.browntroutsystems.com.
Browntroutsystems.com. If you have,
so you could just do Jake at browntroutsystems.com.
Right.
It's fine.
Okay. Hey, Eleanor.
My
good luck.
Website's pretty old.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Tony in Woodstock. Hiya, Tony.
Yes, hi, Ray. How are you?
Good.
I have a problem with iPhoto. Back in the day, when they originally started, you'd put in your camera memory card, say it started at January 1st, 2005, and you'd download the pictures. 6 months later, in June, you might stick the card back in, and you could download the rest of them, and they'd all be in one nice place, chronological. You could just scan through the whole deal. Somewhere along the line, they changed it, and I constantly have these untitled, it says untitled event, but I have a million duplications. I don't know how to get rid of them. What I'm hoping is that there's some way to instruct it to remove all duplicates. Do you know of that?
Is in existence? I have not seen a program as of yet that would analyze your photographs and then remove duplicates.
Well, when you take your memory card and put it in, it says, "Hey, some of these things exist. Do you want a duplicate? Do you want it again?" And you know, most of us say no. But I'm not having that problem. This is stuff that's already in there. And for example, right now I'm looking at three untitled events in a row, all the same date, all the same picture. You know, but the point is it seems to be breaking down everything automatically into some kind of file that I don't particularly want it to.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly how iPhoto is managing your photographs. I mean, what it does is it creates a database, and the way it was going before is it would know based on file size and time and timestamp of an image, it would know whether or not it had downloaded it, and it would keep track of the images that were on your particular device and know what's been downloaded and what hasn't.
Sure.
Somewhere along the way, it got lost, and it's been downloading everything on your device over and over again.
Breaking it down to smaller folders. Well, then let me ask you if this seems like a viable solution. How about if I take everything that's in there, drag it into my external hard drive for protection, so that I've cleaned out iPhoto completely, and then I have the memory cards. I only have two memory cards. There are a lot of pictures in them, but I still have only two cards. And I reload those two cards, and then if I need, you know, if I've somehow missed something, or
that's definitely a good way to go about it.
Yeah,
that's definitely a first shot. I wouldn't discount that option.
All right, Tony, yeah. We've got to move it along here.
I understand. Go
appreciate
ahead.
It. Thanks a lot. Christine in Coxsackie. Christine.
Hi. I want to hook up a laptop to a TV, and I was wondering if I needed a mini DVI to HDMI adapter.
If you have HDMI on your television?
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what you need.
Well, what do you have on your...
I assume you have a Mac laptop?
Oh, no. I did it on my Mac with that adapter, but I want to do it on my friend's computer, which is a PC laptop. Is it different for a PC?
Yes, it's different for a PC. So you would need, depending upon the television, some televisions have VGA or DVI or HDMI connections. So what you need, and most PC laptops, well, if it's a new laptop, it may have an HDMI output. If it's a new laptop with an HDMI output, then you can just take an HDMI cable and plug that into your television.
Yeah.
Right. If it's an older laptop that may only have a VGA type of monitor output, then you'd need a VGA to DVI, VGA to HDMI converter or dongle or whatever you want to call it, that would convert the VGA signal to HDMI, and there you would use that regular HDMI cable to plug into your television.
Exactly.
Assuming,
I think Jake just wanted to say dongle.
Right, and you know, so it makes me a little uncomfortable. Christine, good luck with that. Thank you. Let's go to Mike in Lanesboro. Mike.
Yes, thanks. Quick question here. When my computer room is cold, like let's say 62, 64 degrees, I have a hand-me-down 19-inch Samsung flat-screen monitor. It takes sometimes up to 10 minutes for the picture to come up bright. It'll come up dark and then gets brighter, brighter, brighter. When, like, if I go home now and it's 75 inside the house, I turn the monitor or turn the computer on, it's a matter of 30 seconds and I have a bright screen. What is my problem?
You need a hairdryer. Just
sounds like a capacitor. I mean, capacitor and resistors, they're always affected by heat, whether they get too hot or whatever. It could be something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you've essentially diagnosed the problem. I mean, it's got to be a heat issue. It's taking a little while to warm up. That honestly, I think if you look at regular television, and that people talk about ghost power on your television, the whole idea of these LCD and flat panel TVs is they are constantly on, so that when you turn them on, you immediately get that image. So on your flat screen monitor, when you turn it off, it's actually going off completely. There's no power being drawn. There's no ghost power. There's nothing keeping the circuitry ready and hot and warm and ready to go. So in the colder scenario, it's taking longer for that system to warm up to give you the brightness. It's just
okay. So
it's the nature of the beast.
As long as it's working, you're good to go. Mike, thanks a lot. Let's get one more in here very quickly, and we go to Guido in Pittsfield. You got about 30 seconds here, sir.
I just had a question about the redirect virus, the Google redirect virus. How do I get rid of it?
Malwarebytes.
What is it?
I've tried Malwarebytes. I've tried... when you click on a link, it redirects you to a different.
This is the DNS CGCG. What is it? I had it the other day. This was spoken about on CNN yesterday, the day before, where a virus was found that was redirecting people through DNS. So
right, it affected about 60,000 U.S.
Affected 60,000. Yeah.
Call your ISP and see if they can help you reset your TCP/IP properties on your computer and or your router, specifically your DNS entries.
Guido, we're out of time. How did you know, by the way, that you had this problem?
Because I click on a link and it goes to another link that's not correct.
All right. Hey, listen, we're done. I appreciate your call very much, and sorry if you didn't make it through today. These guys, they're in high demand. Thank you very much, Jake Cunningham and David Stutzram. Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Footwear, Rhinebeck, New York. Footwear for the family, including Vibram, Five Fingers, Sunita Clogs, and Now Sandals, HudsonValleyShoes.com. Amherst Cinema, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring first-run independent film at World Cinema, plays in HD from Britain's National Theater and a summer Woody Allen Festival, amherstcinema.org. New York State tobacco-free community partners working to help parents prevent and reduce youth smoking with prevention programs to counter tobacco marketing and help save lives. New York State tobacco-free community partners at smokefreecapital.org and NBT Bank, offering personal banking, financial planning, commercial and business banking, nbtbank.com, member FDIC. Thanks again for joining us today. Thanks to Jake Cunningham and David Stutzram, our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our esteemed producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for listening today. Tomorrow, it's cars and automotive repair with the one and only Gordon Fricke. Stay tuned now for a news update.